The 2022 NFL season saw a renewed concern for player safety and their future health after the Miami Dolphins quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, suffered a series of head traumas which prematurely ended his season. Tua suffered two confirmed concussions during the 2022 season. The first concussion was missed, and he returned to play within an hour of the occurrence. And the second concussion he sustained during a Christmas Day game against the Green Bay Packers. After discussions with the team, staff, and doctors, Tua was cleared to play after the game, and 4 days later, he sustained another potential concussion during a game against the Cincinnati Bengals, in which he was knocked unconscious and displayed a fencing response in his hands, which typically indicates a serious neurological issue. Tua's injuries quickly spurred changes to the concussion protocols by the NFL and the Players Association. But was it too late? Tua states he's fully recovered, but many are still worried about chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, and if the league is doing enough to protect its players. Could this be the catalyst to an increase in player injury-related tort litigation? Who can players recover from? Would litigation prompt sufficient change to protect players without impeding their career progress? There are surely more questions than answers, but tort law could be the starting point for getting answers.
While doing research on this topic, we came across a law review article. The article was written by Professor Matthew Mitten. Professor Mitten has written several law review articles on the topic of sports law liability and is the executive director of the National Sports Law Institute. Here he is sharing with us his take on where liability can fall in cases where players return to play too soon.
If the athletic trainer or doctor deviated from their professional standard of care, which would either be customary or accepted practice, I think accepted is the better standard. They're liable. Typically, athletic trainers are employees of the school. You have both high schools, colleges. So the institution could be vicariously liable. And then certainly the athlete's got a legal duty to use reasonable care to protect his or her health.
Along with our interview with Professor Mitten, we also conducted interviews with a Division I sports trainer and a doctor who serves as the head of the Intermountain Sports Medicine Group. We decided to sit down and discuss the different perspectives these experts provided, as well as talk about the roles of different actors involved in sports tort liability.
I think it's really important to recognize that what Professor Mitten highlights is that tort concepts can be analyzed in a variety of different contexts and settings, and we need to recognize these different components.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing he really talked about was these doctors, you know, what their association is with the organization, whether that be independent contractor or them working directly as an employee of a university. I had the opportunity to sit down with a sports medicine doctor here locally, Dr. Spencer Richards. He's the head of the Intermountain Healthcare Sports Medicine Group, and he is involved a lot with the sports teams here that are professional and collegiate, and he also travels with the Olympics sports teams. And he essentially was saying, in a broad sense, that his opinion is doctors are pretty much already held to a very high standard, and like, he said a lot of these organizations and divisions come up with their standard of how players should be treated, but they're a very low bar, or they match exactly what the medical board would already hold the doctor to. So he was essentially saying that, like, ultimately, a doctor would have to be pretty grossly negligent in his practice to open himself up to liability.
One of the questions I had for the doctor is, do they think that they feel pressure, or doctors feel pressure to rush athletes back in from coaches or parents or things like that?
Yeah, I had that same question, and I asked Dr. Richards this, and he said he's never felt blatant pressure from a coach, a parent, or an organization to go against his medical advice and sign off on a player before they're ready. He said, obviously, he's had people that have been frustrated, and obviously it's an emotional situation when a player can't play. But he's never faced someone that was, you know, angry at him, threatening to sue him because he said, no, this player is not ready. They have to follow these steps to return to play, and it's going to take them X amount of time.
I think that's a really interesting point, because I had the chance to speak with my former athletic trainer, who is a Division I athletic trainer at Utah Valley University currently. And previously, she was working with a gymnast who was going for this big championship event where she was trying to make the national team. And she injured herself. And Jessica ruled that she had a concussion and wouldn't allow this young player to go in. Unfortunately, this became quite an emotional situation where the mother was actually arguing with her and wanted her daughter to be put back in. And while Jessica, you know, refused to let this player in because she knew from her experience and concussion protocol that it was not safe for this player to go back in, dealing with the threat of a lawsuit for following your medical expertise and yet you're still at risk of repercussions from that, which I think can be a really challenging situation.
I think that's interesting, though. It's just the different sources of pressure and who that pressure is on. So, I mean, like you just said, the athletic trainer faced pressure from a parent. But I wonder, like, what pressures are put on these athletes? Because I know a lot of times maybe a doctor, like I, you know, Spencer Richards was telling me, is like, we give them sound medical advice, but they have to follow that medical advice, and it's essentially up to the player. So I wonder how many players end up diverting from the medical advice given to them because of external pressures from either a coach or maybe other players or parents.
It makes me think of an example from last year, Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins quarterback, who received multiple concussions in consecutive weeks. He ended up being cleared to play after a concussion within the same week that he got it, and then got a subsequent concussion the following week. And it makes us wonder where the pressures he was facing. Was the coach putting pressure on him to return? Was the coach putting pressure on the doctor to clear him? And what that all entailed.
Something that becomes really challenging is when athletes hide their symptoms, because we have these protocols in place to clear players, but you don't know what you're not told at the same time. And especially with concussions, it can be really difficult.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, examining the different pressures that athletes have at different stages of their career, where a high school athlete might have the pressure of trying to get a scholarship to go on to play in college. College athletes similarly probably have a lot of pressure on themselves that go and make it into the pros, or they have coaches trying to win national championships. So these pressures like kind of come from different ways. And then you get to the NFL or professional sports leagues like Tua was in, and they have incentives. So they have, you know, monetary incentives based on how many games they play. And so I think in the NFL it's 12 games and you get an extra bonus. And it might mean, you know, feeding your family more if you're able to play an extra game despite being injured.
Yeah, that definitely goes to all these pressures on each of the players. And I think that's why there's been such a change recently in how players are permitted to return to play. Something that we discovered is a lot of these professional athletes, not so much in NCAA, college level, or high school, but professional athletes actually have to sign documents that state they are aware of all the repercussions, they're aware of the recovery protocols that they have to follow. And this is where we get into that liability. It's like these doctors, these sports trainers, they are shielding themselves from liability and placing it all on the shoulders of these athletes. But these athletes have a competing pressure to, again, feed their family, make sure their career stays on track. It's all really interesting.
We then moved to a discussion sparked by another point brought up by Professor Mitten. Athletes aren't always forthcoming with symptoms and sometimes don't follow prescribed treatment, which can affect their chances of re-injury.
I think that's when the concept of maybe contributory negligence comes into play. You know, if I were a doctor, which obviously I'm not, if I told someone and gave someone instructions from my professional perspective, I wouldn't want to be held. I would think it's very unfair for me to be held liable if this person then turned around and ignored my advice. I can't be next to them 24/7 to make sure that they are doing what they should be doing for their health. I mean, I can only do so much. So
I think these informed consents and these contracts maybe, or these acknowledgments that these players sign is a good thing for at least doctors. I mean, it really should be on the onus of the player once they're an adult. Obviously, they're in high school. Obviously, the parents have to be made aware, and they have to be the primary caregiver for their kids.
Yeah, and contributory negligence, barring liability, going back to what Professor Mitten said, obviously depends on the jurisdiction and what state you're in, because different states have different rules, and some states that completely bars any liability if you're contributory negligent. But in other states, there might still be liability on the doctor, even if they can prove contributory negligence of the player.
As Professor Mitten pointed out, liability can be placed on a number of different actors in these situations. However, players face many obstacles when bringing suits, like their own contributory or comparative negligence and their recurring injuries. The Tua case also highlights another difficulty that players face. While the doctor who cleared Tua to play was ultimately dismissed by the players' union, the NFL concluded that the doctor didn't violate concussion protocol, a fact that could make future litigation very difficult for Tua and players in similar situations. While we could go on forever about this topic, unfortunately that's all the time we have. From our research and discussions, it's clear that torts can certainly play a role in cases where players return to play too soon following injury. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on the Sports Tort Report.